This is Shamir Young, bringing you the Pro Photographer Journey Podcast. Listen in as award-winning photographers discuss how they find opportunities, market their talent, and overcome mistakes to become respected, ever-advancing professional creatives. You'll also hear about their hard-learned lessons, as well as tips for making awesome images. You ready to take your photography business to the next level? Let's do it. And if you haven't already, be sure to pick up your free photography business bundle at prophotographerjourney.com/freebusinessbundle. It's 4 weeks of helpful free gifts delivered every 7 days directly to your email inbox. The first thing you'll get is the PDF e-guide titled 12 Common Business Tips and Mistakes Photographers Wish They'd Known Before Going Pro. And believe me, I've made quite a few of these mistakes myself. After that, you'll get a new free gift every week that will help you propel your photography business forward. So head on over to prophotographerjourney.com/freebusinessbundle and get yours today. Also, if you're enjoying this podcast, please leave a review in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening. The more reviews I get, the easier it is for people to find this podcast in search rankings. And I want to reach as many people as possible. So again, please leave a review. I really appreciate it. All right, let's get to the interview. Hey everybody, I'm here with fashion, editorial, still life, lifestyle, and catalog photographer Alex Alexander. Alex, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
And you know, I'm so excited to talk to you because you have a ton of experience. And just to share with our listeners, I first met Alex at a photography round table probably, how long? Maybe 3 weeks ago?
Yes.
Yeah. And he was sharing with us his experience running his photography business and specifically pricing, which is a big pain point with photographers. And I was just so impressed right after this whole round table. I went up to him and mentioned the show and threw out an offer of him being on it, and he took me up. So I really appreciate that.
I love to talk about photography.
Awesome. Well, you know, first, let's have the listening audience get to know you. So give us an overview of yourself, your background, and how you ended up where you are today.
I've been in the photographic industry, or I should say visual arts industry, for close to 40 years. My background is as a photographer, graphic designer, and an educator. I got my first degree from UC Berkeley in art history. And after that, I taught for a year and got pink slip back in 76 and got my second degree at then Grand Valley State Colleges, now it's Grand Valley University, as photographer and graphic design. And at that time, while I was still in school, I worked for a PBS station, Channel 35 out of Allendale, Michigan. I've been ever since either working a contract with either design firms, ad agencies, in a variety of roles, from photographer to art director. So I wear more than one hat. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of been the basis of what I've been doing, I said, for the past 40 years. 1 year I spent doing nothing but the graphic designs for magazine. So I had to learn the whole area of design. And that whole year I didn't take one photograph. So I would stop and do one thing at one time, and then again I'll do something else. So I'm always changing. I find myself sometimes I can get bored with one area of what I do, and then I just change it and do something else.
And you know, it almost seems like, and maybe you didn't, but it almost seems like you planned this in advance. I mean, just the degree to which you're so well-rounded. You've got the art history degree and then the photography and graphic design degree. And you've been an art director, as you mentioned, and work with design agencies. I mean, there are so many skills that come into play there, not just photography and creativity, but also communication and dealing with people. Has this always just come naturally to you?
I'm what you call an only child. In other words, parents gave me everything as growing up to do different things. Fifth grade, I took German in the summer instead of playing baseball. So it was great that I did that, but then I moved on to something else. I took Japanese the year after that. So language was another thing. So it was constantly keeping me motivated.
Oh, that is
And
awesome.
there's also a curse to it, because sometimes when I'm working with, say, design firms or ad agencies or things like that, they want you to specialize in one thing and one thing only, and they think that you can't do everything under the sun. And I hope I can prove to them that I can. So everyone says if you're a generalist, you do everything. But even as a generalist, you have to be an expert in every area that you are working in.
That's true. And, you know, we have more in common than I knew. We already had a lot in common. But talking about you taking German, that takes me back to college. I took a German class 1 year, and then I took a Yiddish class another semester, just to learn something different.
Yes.
So I totally feel you there. And it's so funny because I remember the first week I had that Yiddish class, you know, I was the only, I believe, non-Jewish person in there.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the girls came up to me and she was friendly. This was after class. And she asked me, "Why are you here?" And it was just a curious question because she couldn't understand, you know, why I would take Yiddish of all things for fun. And, you know, I told her, well, I already have a little background in German and I just wanted to study something else that I didn't know, you know. So kudos to you for really educating yourself.
And photography gives us that experience to explore different things. We're not always shooting the same thing, especially if we're photographing people or locations, countries or cities or things. The thing I do is I research.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I just go there and shoot. I research anything that I'm doing or subject matter. I learn as much as I can. So when I get there, I put them at ease and I also learn something and I'll spurt out something of their background of what they're doing with some knowledge. So that kind of breaks down that barrier of, oh, he's just here to photograph me and that's it.
That's true. And that's a very good point.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this really takes me to our next question. What area or areas of photography then would you call your expertise or your favorite?
Fashion.
Huh.
And fashion is not just the idea of photographing a model or a clothing is. At one point, I went through a whole barrage of things in college, from fine arts painter to wanting to learn textile to wanting to be a fashion designer. And so since I was not able to do either of those two, I still appreciated and started studying things on textile, or I hung around designers. In fact, in one of my studios, I had a fashion designer. And so I saw him sewing every day. I can't sew to save my life, but I appreciate clothing. And so that's always been a thing for me of why I've got into fashion.
That's so interesting. And, you know, there is something to be said for being familiar with your subject matter. And even how you mentioned research a few moments ago, I think that can really make a difference when you're walking into a shoot, walking in cold versus being familiar. And I firmly believe that your familiarity with your subject would really come through in the way that you communicate with them and would help put them at ease and also make you more of an authority as that photographer, that fashion photographer.
Yes.
Very cool. Well, now tell us, how do you get yourself inspired for a photo shoot? And it can be fashion photography or any of your other areas of expertise.
One area I think I didn't include, I do food photography.
Oh.
I'm a foodie. And as a foodie, with anything else, it's a passion. It's something that you do beyond the assignment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I took also 2 years of cooking classes. So that was another plus for me.
No kidding.
I leave things off my resume because it's not that I overdo things. I'm also an architectural photographer. I've been hired specifically for architectural photography for years when I was in Grand Rapids.
Interesting. Okay. And so then let's talk about food photography, which I think is awesome. I love food. When you're setting up a photo shoot, how do you get yourself inspired for that particular food photo shoot? Is it tasting the food beforehand or studying up on it?
It's a mixture of tasting it, preparing it. But a lot of times when I'm doing food photography, I have a food stylist.
Mm.
But with the food stylist, we're both aware of how it's presented.
Mm-hmm.
And the big thing about a lot of photography, a lot of it is an illusion. I think I explained this to some students yesterday, that if you look at a hamburger like McDonald's, when you're in the drive-thru and stuff and see how big and juicy it is,
mm-hmm.
a lot of it is never really cooked through. If you ever cook a burger through, it shrinks.
Yeah, that's so,
so
true.
So a lot of it is using dyes on the meat to burning it on the outside, where so it's not going to shrink. So there's a lot that goes into it. So when I'm working with a stylist, we both know how to get to that end image.
Oh, that's so interesting. You know, I did not know that about food photography.
I'm looking at a commercial on TV with a burger, and they're big and juicy, but 90% of the time, they're never fully cooked through. You see the big turkeys, how plump they are. Mm-hmm. They're not cooked through.
And you know, I'm sure I'm not the only one that has seen a food commercial. And then you go into the actual whatever fast food restaurant. It's like, oh, this doesn't look anything like how it is on TV.
True.
That explains it.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Well, now next, let me ask you this, because we have a plethora. I don't know if I'm using that word right. There's so many images everywhere online, on TV, photos. And so in your opinion, what makes a good photo stand out from a photo that's just average?
It has to tell a story.
Mm.
No matter if it's you're doing product, you're doing travel, you're doing food, you're photographing a person, it has to have something that is going to tell us. Emotions from a person, food, how do you want to get that person excited about it? It has to be juicy. Or travel, you have to have a scene that says, I want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes down to storytelling. And a photographer who I used to hang around with here in Detroit, his name's Junebug Clark, and his whole theme, how he approached on his website, and him and his father did all the Jack Daniel ads, and it was about storytelling.
Oh.
And so I just adapt that to not only my work, but what other images I'm seeing. What are they trying to tell me?
Mm-hmm.
It could be a simple emotion, or it could be a loud, boisterous thing that they're saying.
That's so true. And I'm so glad that you included all genres of photography, including food, because I think for people listening today, and even myself years ago starting out, when I thought of photography that told a story, it was easy to focus on wedding photography or journalistic photography. But you said even food photography, which is absolutely true. So that's all genres.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, next, let's talk about the tools of the trade. And I do like to sometimes ask about what gear people use, although I want to mention that I don't want to focus on this because that is absolutely not what makes or breaks a photographer. And so what's your typical go-to gear for a shoot?
For me, I shoot mainly, I should say exclusively, I shoot medium format, 4x5, an 8x10 view camera.
Mm-hmm.
I do not own a 35mm digital DSLR anymore. I've stopped using that since 96, because most of my clients were advertising, and at that time they wanted everything in medium format.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just gravitated to that, and that's all I shoot. And the problem with medium format, at least with my Mamiya RZs, they're German tanks. They're giant. They're heavy to hold. You can't do sports photography with it, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say for me, my main gear as far as camera is Mamiya.
Excellent. And what's your favorite photography accessory other than your camera? And tell us why.
Oh, accessories. Well, I have a wind machine.
Huh. Okay.
I love my wind machine for doing effects. And I've had this thing for 20 years. And someone wanted to use it the other day. And I said, no, I can't give this away to anyone. But I love those effects. You know, you've got other accessories with flash and things like that.
Right.
But my wind machine is one of my favorites.
You know, that's why I like asking this question, because I get unique answers. And I don't know if I've ever had anyone say a wind machine before, but but that is a great answer. I remember working at a motorcycle magazine, and we fly in our own models, and we always had our wind machine on standby.
Yeah.
I mean, that thing, it makes a difference. It does. From, you know, a kind of interesting scene to something that's really visually interesting. That's a great answer.
Because for one thing, the saying goes from a small breeze to a hurricane breeze.
I like it. And, you know, shout out to models out there, because it's not easy, by the way.
No, it's not.
I've seen them shivering, you know, and they have to look so natural on camera, but it is work.
Yes, it is.
Excellent. Well, next, let's move on and talk about the business side of photography, because I think this is something that is extremely important as the photos that you take are how you run your business. And it's also something that I see many creatives struggle with, myself included, actually. I've made just about every single mistake in the book. And so I want to ask you, what's the most challenging aspect of being in business for yourself?
Getting in writing. When you're working with someone, client, friend, even my family, I get everything in writing. This is a business and you have to treat it as a business. Yes, we are visual artists and we can rely on, I love this image and just give it away for free. And guess what? I went down the same mistakes of giving stuff away for next to nothing and not getting it in writing. And so you have to treat this as a business. If you're going to make a living at it, you can be fortunate to come into large amounts of income from this if you treat it as a business.
And so was there ever a time where you did not get something in writing and it backfired on you?
Yes, it did. Got out of Grand Valley State College and I did an annual report for Kendall School of Design. I had no written, it was verbal, what images were going to be used. And they used it for the brochure. They called up a day later and said, oh, by the way, we're going to use this for a billboard.
What?
And that would have been something extra.
Yeah.
And I learned my lesson. After that day, everything was done in writing.
And you know, a school of design, they should have known better. They had to have known.
Yeah, but they got me right out of college.
Yep.
And the thing back then, when I graduated, there was no business class. There was no contract class. So I think that's changed now, but they need to do more than just one class, basic class. They give them a one basic business class, but they need to go into real depth of learning contracts. In other words, if you were to hire me today, the first thing I'm going to do is get it in writing.
Exactly. Absolutely.
What's going to per se and have a signature. And that's another thing that you have to stick to. Get it in writing. Who's the buyer? Who really is the person who's going to pay you?
Absolutely.
And have a signature, because things will change during any type of project.
Yes. And you mentioned that you even with family and friends, you get it in writing, which is really, it's crucial, even if it is a family member or a friend. And I think sometimes you need it in writing the most for them as well. So for our listeners out there who are just getting started, and maybe you are mainly getting gigs from family and friends, and you think, oh, well, I know this person and we don't need it in writing. It can all be verbal. No, absolutely. Have some kind of contract in place.
Yes.
Excellent.
And the reason I have these type of contracts, the organization I belong to is called American Society of Media Photographers. And that's one of our goals, is to educate photographers on the business side of photography.
And just curious, do you all offer resources that would help photographers learn how to write contracts?
Well, they give you contracts already that are helpful, suggestions of what you can put into the, because you could easily tear them apart and fit them to your own needs. There's also software that will give you that access to create things. It's called BlinkBid.
Yes.
And you can get a demo version of that online. And then the full version, it goes through not only terms and conditions, but licensing for not only the U.S., but you get an idea of international and things like that. And those are the tools that you really have to do, because the smallest amount of stuff we do as a visual artist is click the shutter.
Yep. That's true.
90% of what I do is either I'm on the phone, or I'm sending someone an estimate and getting back and forth on, okay, they're going to look at what my terms and conditions. They say, well, we don't like this. So I spend more time dealing with that than actual work.
Yes, and I think it's something that many of us learn the hard way. Or
yes.
You go into it and you have these rosy glasses on where you think all you're going to be doing is pressing that shutter and taking photos.
And we all fall into it.
I'm telling you.
Into that. Mm-hmm.
Well, I will definitely include links to those resources in the show notes because it's important that photographers know where to go to get help and better their business.
With ASMP, you can be a student member or a general member. And we have different areas of membership into the organization.
Awesome. Now, next, Alex, tell us, what have you found to be the most effective techniques for getting new clients, assignments, or projects?
As much as we are in the digital world, I still believe in direct mail pieces, printed pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're looking at a computer screen, you don't get the true depth of what's going to be either printed. We're so into, it's got to be on a website, but sometimes I would say still clients still do print work. And if that quality doesn't show through, you know, you're not going to get work. So I send out every 6 weeks a different promo piece.
Excellent. Okay. Every 6 weeks.
Yes. I have a theme. I'll run a theme of, I love sushi, and maybe the images will be of sushi shots, or it could be of just a lifestyle shot.
I love sushi too. And that's a great point, because I think it's easy to be over reliant on a website. And you know, if you're trying to get into, let's say, a magazine, that editor is busy. And they are not going to have time to go to your website and visit it periodically ever however many weeks. And, you know, back to when I was working at the magazine, we'd get a ton of emails and even print pieces. But it was the people that kept consistently getting their work in front of our eyes. And a lot of that was with print that we really began to take notice.
And as a photographer, you know, as a visual artist trying to lure that new client, you've got to be creative. You have to either have an image that has humor or something to it that appeals to them. The thing is, I learn is I find out much about that art director of what they like, not so much about my work. The one thing I do, if I send a promo piece, I have a card that they send back to me. What are their likes? What are their tastes? What's their birthday?
You have them fill it out?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting. And they actually fill it out for you?
Yes, they do.
Wow.
And so now I can target that one art director that likes Cuban cigars and do a whole, you know, shot or send him an image that gives him that convey that feel.
Oh, that's so cool.
And so you're tailoring it. So you have to really think who your audience is as far as art directors. And you have to appeal to their nature of not so much who are some of the clients, even though you want to work with their clients, but give them something that they're interested in. And I'll tell you, 90% of the time, I get them with food shots. And even though I'm not getting this time, I'm getting more, you know, people shots, but they love my food shots.
And you know, this also brings up another point that you consistently reach out to them. I think for many people starting off, it can be easy to send out something once. And then if you don't hear back, then you might get discouraged. You go, oh, well, they don't like my work, you know.
You have to follow up. One publication I worked for was Metro Parent Magazine, which is located here in Metro Detroit. It took me a year. I said, at that time, my daughters were babies. So I love the magazine. I said, I'm a reader of your publication and didn't get a bite from them. And I sent them some samples, but I sent them in a package where it was a fortune cookie box. And I put fortune cookies in, you crack them open, and there was my name, photography.
That's so unique. Oh, now did you do this one time? I want to dig into this a little bit. Did you do this one time with the fortune cookies, or was that one of the things that you sent them?
That's one of many things that I sent them.
Okay.
And then what really, I think, got me in was they were starting a new magazine called African American Magazine, which now is called Black. I saw the article in Detroit News, and that day I called them up and I said, hi, my name is Gordon Alexander. I'm an African-American photographer in Detroit City, and I'm going to be the first photographer to photograph your cover for your magazine.
Such confidence.
That's more egotistic. And 2 weeks later, not only did I photograph their cover, but I was the staff photographer both for Black Magazine and Metro Parent.
Ah, there you go.
So you have to push the boundaries. Mm-hmm. You have to have that ego, or why be in this industry?
That's a good point. I think a lot of it is believing in yourself, believing that you can do it.
Yes.
And stopping with all of the doubting and even the self-hating.
Mm-hmm. Like when I was with your group, mm-hmm. I told you the first thing is we live in fear as an artist of work. Are we going to get work? Are they going to like me? Fear, fear, fear. And it's always going to be there. But if you keep it to a minimum, I think your goals of what you set to do will happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And yeah, when you mentioned that at our group, when we were meeting that day, that really resonated with me, because I remember, I mean, I've lived in fear for years. And a lot of times we don't even recognize it as fear. But when you're constantly worried that you're not good enough, or that you're not sure how you're going to pay this particular bill, or you're doubting yourself as a photographer or a creator or whatever, I mean, that is absolutely living in fear. And that limits your
yes.
productivity.
Yes.
And before actually we move on, I wanted to ask you then, back to following up, how you were following up for a year with this particular publication. Was that with the 6-week schedule, or did it vary?
That one varied.
Okay.
I would get a response back from the art director. I'm busy at this moment. I can't see you. I don't have time to look at your portfolio. Mm-hmm. So that never discouraged me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just pursued it in another way. Okay, I'll send out something else that has nothing to do with Metro Parent or parenting. And you touch bases on something that I think what happened was I don't know what the particular image, but she called back and laughed at what I sent.
Okay.
And that broke the ice.
So it's building a relationship.
Yes.
I like that.
We have a tendency of getting what I call one-time clients. And the thing is, we're always going to get those one-time clients, but how do you turn that one-time client into a client that will work for you, with you, for 6 months or a year or 15 years?
Absolutely. And it's kind of like dating too. I mean, you know,
yeah,
you're trying to meet somebody and you don't go up to them and say, hey, do you want to get married? Or, hey, do you want to do? No, you have to get to know them.
And even when you get that client, a year from now, that art director may leave and someone else comes in, it starts the whole process all over again.
Oh, that's so true. Mm-hmm.
So you're constantly seeing what's happening.
That's such a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Now let's move on and talk about lessons that you've learned over the years. What is the most common mistake that you see other professional photographers make, or that you have made, and how do we overcome that mistake?
They shoot off the top of their head.
Okay.
They don't think things through. Not so much, I mean, everything from the contracts, but when you're on a shoot, research. Mm-hmm. You have to really research what you're doing, because they're relying on your expertise. And if you fail during a shoot, you're not going to get hired back. So it's about putting in that time. You may go to a shoot, it lasts 4 hours, but sometimes you're doing something for a week before that, mm-hmm. to prepare for the shoot. I'll go through a trial run on a shoot. If it's a location shoot where it's a one-time event where I'm shooting at a location, I set up my equipment, I test it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I have an assistant and stuff for that, I still go through everything. I double check everything.
Mm.
So when I get there, hopefully the shoot will go as I predicted it.
Mm-hmm.
Or if something arises where there's a crisis, I can relax, take a deep breath, regroup, and then go forward with it.
Excellent.
Because we've all fallen into where something has gone wrong.
Oh, yeah. You can count on that pretty much. And now next, Alex, tell us, what's one thing you wish you knew before you stepped into photography professionally?
Longevity of it.
Okay.
Because in the past 28 years of being in Detroit, a lot of my peers are no longer in the industry. And I wonder why I'm still in it. Could it be I'm stubborn? Or I still have things to do. I still have things to say. And that has been the biggest thing that's been on my mind, I would say, for the past 15 years. Why am I still in this industry?
Why do you think you outlasted your peers?
I have still what I consider 20 more years of things I want to say, not only as a business person, but as an artist. I still have images that I want to leave behind that will say something about me long after I'm gone.
Interesting. And you know, I think another part of it, my take, and you tell me if I'm wrong, it's okay, you can call me out. But I also think it's because you run your business in a way that is sustainable. You know what to charge, you know what contracts you need, you know how to reach out and you know, communicate with art directors or potential clients. And I see a lot of talent. I see some extremely talented photographers who struggle with running their business. And a lot of them end up stepping away from it as a business, even though they have mad talent. And I think with you've got the talent, but also the business sense.
But I also give that business to other people to handle for me. I have a rep in San Francisco, so she will bid out on jobs for me also. Okay. So it's not just me by myself doing it.
I like that you got a rep. Okay. And real quick, because it could probably be its own podcast episode, but how did you get that rep? I'm sure our listening audience, their ears just perked up.
My rep is named Deanna Delbridge. Mm-hmm. She came to an ASMP meeting on expanding photographers' portfolio. And she's originally from Detroit, but she's in San Francisco now. And so she caters to not only artists, but she also deals with the Fortune 500 companies. Mm-hmm. So she has an in to whoever the art directors are and things like that. And so after the meeting, I talked with her. And a year later, I said, look at my work. Do you think I'm viable to do the type of work, what I call the big guys, shooting with the big guys? And she said, yes. And the first thing she told me was, play with whatever I'm doing. Have it as fun. Enjoy it. So
interesting. Okay, good stuff. Well, we're coming up towards the end of our interview, which I always have a touch of sadness at the end because I really enjoy these conversations. But can you tell us, is there a particular photography resource, a tool, online course, a book, whatever that you would recommend to help our listening audience today with their photography businesses?
Oh, it's endless. The one thing I would say, go to ASMP website. That's one. Creative Live is a nice one. There's so many different ones that you can touch on.
And those two are excellent.
I mean, the thing is, you can Google videos. There's videos on YouTube and different ones that you can get an idea of how they approach photography, how they approach architectural photography. And you're constantly reading. Photo District News is a publication that I think that people will like, because they go through a wide range of everything from stock photography, portrait, advertising. They even have wedding issue.
Very cool. And our final question, but the most, one of the most important, tell us where we can find you online.
CreativeSandboxStudio.com.
Excellent. And, you know, just thank you so much, Alex, for just letting me pick your brain. You know, we really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Are you getting ready for your first photo shoot and need to learn some common mistakes to avoid? Or maybe you need to learn how to communicate with your clients and grow your business through email marketing. Or perhaps you're just getting started with your website and you're trying to figure out this WordPress hosting stuff. When you're in business for yourself, it's a lifelong learning process for sure. And that's why I've set up the Pro Photographer Journey Resource Center. You can learn all of this and more through my free and paid self-paced online courses. Each course focuses on these individual topics and is designed to hold your hand every step of the way and help you learn how to run your business more successfully. You'll also find a host of other tools in the Resource Center that are useful for running your photography business, many of which I use myself. From email marketing tools to forming an LLC for your business to cool image editing software, it's there. And wherever possible, I include coupon codes to these online services so that you can grab a discount. So check it out at prophotographerjourney.com/resource center. That's prophotographerjourney.com/resource center.